As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on The Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Kamen,
Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
What do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to
executives in the league is
not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Usual suspect Anthony Slater on the West Coast is with us and one of our favorites back in the house, John Krasinski, Mr. Minnesota. JK, what's up, brother?
What's happening, fellas?
Appreciate you jumping on. As always, we love having you on, but your Timberwolves squad is incredibly interesting at the moment. You know, we thought initially, if we're being honest, that, you know, the invitation was, you know, John, come on and talk about the dumpster fire, you know, but then they pull out a W against Cleveland, and Wolves coach Chris Finch rightfully says he's not in the mood to be picky. So a win is a win is a win, even though the Cavs didn't have Donovan Mitchell. But we will get into all things Wolves. Slater, right up your alley on this week's Tampering. We are going to dissect the struggling defending champion Golden
Five
State
and
Warriors.
Eight.
5-8, 0-7 on the road.
0-7 on the road.
With all due respect to the surging Kings, who we will also discuss this week, you know, dropping games to the Kings and making, you know, their fans were just on cloud nine last night as you
that,
and I
that actually left might have been the best road team they've lost to in the 0-7 start.
Mm. Wow, what a statement. And that purple laser was just soaring up into the sky above the Golden 1 Center. Guys, we are also going to make the rounds a little bit before we dive in here and do our thing. The struggling Cavs, Slater and I both got to see Cleveland up close, and they've lost four straight after starting 8-1. Talk a little bit of Cleveland. What am I leaving out here? I think we need to talk a little bit of early MVP talk. Yeah, it is very early, way too
Don't
early.
Do it to me, Sam.
Hey, Steph Curry had a few things to say in the locker room the other day about the MVP, you know, narratives and discussions. Maybe we'll kind of hint at that a little bit. But Joel Embiid says, I am here to make my first big-time early season statement. As just a monster game on Sunday night. So lots to get into. And last but not least, we got to talk a little Oklahoma City Thunder, and we'll get into why. But John, let's throw it your way, brother. You know, your Wolves, we know the macro here, right? You know, the Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, quote unquote, experiment. I mean, you know, experiments don't come with the kind of price that Tim Connelly and Minnesota paid to get him. So I don't, that's not the right way of describing it, but they are all in, and we got everything from, you know, this is, you're in it every day, but for the casual fans who have not paid attention, you know, young star Anthony Edwards raises eyebrows somewhat recently when kind of dissecting the way that the T-Wolves function and talking about how, you know, he doesn't dunk as much as he used to because the bigs are clogging up the lanes down low. And in general, there has just been a clunkiness, right, to what they do. And from reading your coverage, you know, one might say a void of spirit and the kind of competitiveness that they were known for last season. You know, but early on here, not really that early, we're coming up on 20% of the season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that everyone expected some bumps in the road to start. I mean, this is an unconventional roster construction with Kat, with Rudy together, trying to figure all of that out. They traded some really important pieces as well out in the Jazz trade. I mean, they didn't just give up picks. They gave up real players who helped them a lot last year. Patrick Beverley, Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt. So I think that there was always going to be a period of acclimation for these guys and trying to understand how Rudy likes to play, what's best to be doing around him and all of that. And so from that aspect, it's not incredibly surprising, but certainly the concerning thing that we have seen outside of last night in Cleveland was a general lack of competitiveness, a general lack of spirit, as you said, Sam. I mean, this is a team that was, you know, one of the leaders in good vibes last year. Like they had swagger, they talked trash, they got after it, they competed. And I think that they achieved more than their collective talent would suggest that they would by getting to the first round of the playoffs, maybe even, you know, putting a real scare into Memphis and then bowing out. So that has not been there so far this year. They have given in way too easily and way too often to some of their opponents. They're not making any shots, and you can just see kind of the frustration that is on their faces. They play a joyless brand of basketball right now. And so I do think some of that is the expectations. I think some of that is the period of adjustment that is going on, and there are little signs of it getting better over the last week or so. But all in all, yeah, I think it's a team that is very much searching and trying to find answers that are not easy to find right now, and that's weighing on everyone.
I'm reading these John Krasinski like autopsy reports like once every 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, they have varying.
Yeah, that
themes,
body's been picked apart
but
a bit.
The one, you know, and I covered him, so I'm interested. But like the D'Angelo Russell seems like, you know, I guess one of the main characters right now. Expiring contract, expiring big contract. Not playing well. What's he shooting from three at this point?
It's like 20. Well, last night he had a good night, but right going into last night, it was 29% from three, 37% from the field in general, both career lows.
Yeah. And his, like, you know, his only appeal really is supposed to be his efficiency. You know, like he can obviously hit the three, you know, pick and roll operator, and he's not doing that well. His defense obviously is going to be a problem because it always is. I remember last season, we all remember they benched him for McLaughlin in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, reading you recently, it's like, should they bench him right now? You know, but they're in a tough position because, you know, obviously they're like super like capped out in a sense of they can't really, you know, it's they can't replace his salary slot. It's going to be, and they don't have a point guard, you know, in the, you know, beyond this season if they don't retain him. So that helps in his leverage, but also like he's a guy in a contract year struggling, and like that never helps within these like unsettled situations. Like, how big a problem is that right now?
Yeah, it's been an issue. Like I'll say that there are plenty of blame to go around right now. Rudy has not played up to his normal level. Karl-Anthony Towns adjusting to the four has been an issue. Anthony Edwards trying to find things, like all of this has been a problem. So it's not just one thing, but D'Angelo Russell, by and large, has been a big issue for this team. He came into the season in remarkable spirits. Like, I think he got a lot of people's hopes up because even though he did not get the contract extension that he wanted, he was saying all the right things. He was talking about the changes that were made, about playing with Rudy Gobert and how that would help him, about how he wasn't worried about the money right now and that he just wanted to win and then that would all take care of itself. And so I think that internally the Timberwolves were cautiously optimistic that, hey, maybe D'Angelo would have this a similar contract year to what he had in Brooklyn when he made the All-Star team and really was kind of a unifying force on that team. It has not been that way since the season started. He has not been able to shoot, has really struggled trying to find that part of his game. He is playing probably the worst defense of his career, and that's saying something. He's not a defender at all, but he's just been inattentive on that end. Chris Finch did bench him in Memphis for the last 5 minutes of the game because of some of the defensive breakdowns that he was having. And he's also has the probably 3 to 4 head scratching turnovers a game that are just, you know, lazy passes, live ball turnovers that turn into points and buckets the other way. Chris Finch has resisted changing the starting lineup and for two reasons. One is he, like you said, Anthony, he does not have the clear cut answer to plug in for him. If you're going to move him out of there, Jerry McLaughlin's a nice player, but maybe not a starter. He's shooting 11% from three. So he's not going to help you in the shooting aspect of things.
10.5 actually.
Yeah. Well, there 10. We go. 5, yes. And he's small. And so there's defensive issues. He plays with great pace and gets other guys involved, but he's got limitations. But also is if you move D'Angelo to the bench in a contract year, how does he handle that? That's a big issue. And so Finch has stayed with him and he was rewarded last night. D'Angelo Russell was terrific last night. 11 for 13 from the field, 30 points, 12 assists, hit a bunch of threes. He was 6 for 6 at the start, got the team going. And obviously when those shots started falling, the entire team responded really well to it. And that really kind of lifted this team spirits in a way that we have not seen for much of the season. And so can D'Angelo sustain that? Obviously you don't need 30 and 12 from him every night, but you need engagement. You need shot making, you need efficiency. He has not been able to do that, but if they can find a way to get more consistency out of D'Angelo Russell, I think that would go a long way to helping this team sort of find a bit of an identity and carve a path forward here. Because he's not been good at all. And he was great last night. And that's going to just kind of be the carrot in front of them that I think keeps them sticking with it.
John, as we kind of make the way around the Wolves locker room, you know, good breakdown of D'Angelo there. Let's go to the new guy, the big fella, you know, next to Carl, Rudy. And you kind of alluded to him not playing up to caliber for his reputation. They are 19th right now in defensive rating. They were 13th last season. They did not go out and make this move, you know, to slide back 6 spots in that particular category. You know, and not only basketball-wise, but what is your outlook and your perspective on the, you know, the chemistry dynamics and the relationship stuff and the locker room and assimilation and all of that? Because in Rudy's time in Utah, that was a constant source of scrutiny, you know, and with he and Donovan Mitchell and just that idea of, you know, it's a partly a leadership thing and it's partly kind of a style thing. So what are you seeing as far as Rudy goes?
Yeah, I think that he played in Eurobasket, and so he did not play much in training camp. And so I think that that has been a detriment to the start here because this is such a new thing. They are trying to do things so differently than they're normally doing in the NBA. And I think they needed practice time and playing time in the preseason to figure this out, and they just didn't get it because they wanted to rest Rudy a little bit coming out of Eurobasket. And also Karl-Anthony Towns was out for the first full week with a throat infection. And so they have been behind the eight ball from the start, and it just looks like that. They look like they don't know how to play together. And that's not just Kat and Rudy, that's the entire team and Rudy. They have changed the way that they defend with Rudy Gobert in there. Last year, they were very much a scrambling, intense cover for each other, run around with your hair on fire, create turnovers and get out in transition type of a defense. With Rudy there, they're much more drop coverage, stay at home, be disciplined. And that's taken a lot of time for everyone to adjust to. And so you're seeing wide open threes being given up because they're used to having to help down in the paint, and they're learning that they don't have to with Rudy. And so they're giving up a lot of open threes. Secondly, with Rudy, they are trying to get him more involved offensively. The big message when they traded for him was that he can do more offensively than what he showed in Utah. So they're getting him in ball, in dribble handoff actions. They're trying to get him in the post a little bit. And I think they're kind of force feeding it right now, to be honest, Sam. Like, I don't think it's been a good start to the season, because they're just trying to get him happy and engaged and feel like, hey, we're looking for you, big fella. And he doesn't catch the ball very well and very cleanly. And when you force it in there, it kind of bogs down the rest of the offense sometimes. And so the good news is that Rudy is leading the league in rebounding. He's doing his job that way. The bad news is that they're like 27th in defensive rebounding percentage.
Yeah, I have it here. It's 28th.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I was going to go next. It's mm-hmm. counterintuitive, just to put a little more meat on that bone. I mean, they're 28th in defensive rebound percentage. They are, let me find it, 13th in blocks, which is, a decline from last year. I mean, everything in a vacuum that you would have thought Rudy Gobert was bringing to Minnesota has gotten worse.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that has been an early adjustment for them is the reason they're so bad defensive rebounding percentage-wise is that the guards have not rebounded at all. D'Angelo Russell, I mean, Edwards has had some good games, but D'Angelo Russell does not go get the long rebounds coming off of missed shots. Jaden McDaniels hasn't done a lot of it. And, you know, Cat has been decent at it, but he gets sucked out into the perimeter guarding fours, and then he's not there to grab rebounds either. And so I just think that it speaks to a team that is playing an entirely different style than they did last year, and they don't really know how to do it yet. So far, they have shown that they're not a really high IQ team. They make a lot of mental errors, both on offense and on defense, that have contributed to turnovers, which contribute to quick points the other way. And that's been a real issue. As far as your question about leadership and all that, I get the impression that Rudy has sort of tried to not overwhelm people with vocal leadership and holding people accountable yet. I think he still feels like he's new here and he doesn't want to step on toes just yet. But there's in general been a lack of leadership in the locker room. They let Pat Bev go. He was kind of the vocal guy that grabbed everyone by the shirt collars and held people accountable. That has not been replaced yet. And so they're a little bit rudderless right now in the locker room from a leadership standpoint. And I think that Rudy wants to be that guy, but I think he's being careful about saying too much right away while he's still new here and while he's got to play better to try to justify the way that he holds people accountable as well.
Isn't one of Gobert's like issues from Utah similar to what we're talking about though, right? Like, he kind of always wanted to be involved more offensively, and it's,
yeah,
you know, it's probably not good. I mean, you kind of laid it out, but in an ideal world, Rudy Gobert would just be like, I'm protecting the hell out of the paint. I'm rebounding like crazy. And like, sure, if I get a rebound put back or a lob when it makes sense, fine, but I don't need it. You know, we're about to get to a lot of the Warriors problems, but one of the Warriors problems is not Kevon Looney, because Kevon Looney could not care if he gets 0 points on zero shots for the next month. Like, he's just like, I'm doing the grime work. To me, that's a concern on the Gobert front. And then when we talk leadership, to me, that's got to be Towns, right? He is the veteran who's been there, done that. And obviously he's already had like stumbling blocks attempting to be the, you know, call out guys type leader with, you know, the quote he had about Edwards. And then to me, the bigger picture issue we haven't talked about yet, like Edwards, outside looking in, I assume you'd agree, is like the most important player for the future.
Yeah.
And they've constructed a roster, it seems, that he doesn't really like playing with, right? It just, I'm not talking about the players, the personalities, but just like the lane is very occupied right now. I want a runway, and a runway is not there because there's Goliaths down there. And that's like a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Gobert and Towns are similar in that they both want to be vocal leaders, but historically we've seen players not really responding to their vocal leadership. And, you know, I don't know exactly why that is, but, you know, there are some players who can just walk into a locker room and immediately command the room. And neither one of Rudy or Kat have ever been those guys. And so, so in the absence of that, there just is not that central force, that Draymond Green, that Pat Bev, that Steph Curry, that, you know, those kinds of the Damian Lillards of the world. Like they don't have that just yet. And maybe that will
mid-tier role players can really help in that. And that's where Beverly's good, right? He's not your star, but he'll just kind of glue a locker room. They don't seem to have that.
Yeah, I think like Taurean Prince and Kyle Anderson are trying to be that, but it's not as natural for them. And so, yes, they need something like that to emerge. And I think it can. I think it can. They need, you know, this is all happening. We're examining this team in it's probably in kind of its lowest time right now, that it's uncertain. They don't have any kind of trust yet built up. And I think that as they go along, if they can pile up some wins and start to have some success, I think some of that will formulate. We're just still in the very nascent stages of it. So I'm not ready to panic or say that this is definitely not going to work or anything, but they are grinding through it right now that way. And Ant is one who is grinding through it as well. Like he's running some pick and roll right now with Rudy, but he's never really thrown lobs before in his life. He just hasn't done that as part of his game. So that chemistry has been slow to form. It's starting to show a little bit more, but he, you know, he is used to running a five out offense where he can just dive to the rim and attack it. And that is not what they're doing anymore. And so now he has to figure out how to be effective and still get to the rim that way. And he's doing it, but he's just finding a lot more traffic there. And I think he can adjust and he will adjust, but it is taking some time and it is, you know, it's wearing on everyone a little bit. He had a great game in Memphis on Friday night and looked more like himself than against Cleveland on Sunday night. It was, he was not very involved while D'Angelo was playing well, while Carl Anthony Towns was playing well, Ant was kind of off in the corner watching a little bit. So they're all just trying to see how these puzzle pieces fit together and get to a point where they can trust each other. Or if I pass the ball, I can get it back and get a good shot. And I just don't think they have been there yet. Again, last night without Jared Allen, without Donovan Mitchell, they really did, you know, they wrecked the Cavs for a lot of that game. And Darius Garland had an unbelievable superhuman game to get them back in it. But that was their best game of the season last night. And they have to find a way to bottle some of that energy and some of that connective tissue and keep going forward with it to try and build this thing up.
It's interesting, as an aside before we jump in for a quick ad break and then we'll get on to the Warriors, is the Cavs as this parallel. And John, you and I talked about this on the phone the other day, that the Cavs are coming at you with Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, that, you know, conceivably two bigs, kind of like the Wolves. Anthony Edwards on one side complaining about the runway being clogged, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland thriving on the other side. Now, that conversation that you and I had was before they dropped four games in a row. So it's not all kind of sunshine and rainbows for Cleveland right now. With Anthony, lightheartedly, I was sitting here talking about runways and his frustrations. He just needs to go watch the movie Maverick, where you got a short runway.
Yeah.
You know, just get gravel and broken concrete everywhere. You Amy find a way.
You are speaking my language.
Yes.
Yeah. I do like that you compared, you know, Cleveland and Minnesota in that sense, because like Jared Allen doesn't need touches. You know what I mean? And to me, Garland and Mitchell are such elite shooters that sometimes you can operate without having to cram it down, you know, a defense's throat. Whereas, you know, Edwards, like, he wants to score inside. He's not as efficient a jump shooter. Obviously, he can get to it. But to me, that's where there's a little bit more colliding. But again, we're talking after the Wolves just beat the Cavs. So.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is that I think that the transition of Mitchell to that team has gone smoother than Rudy to Minnesota, because Mitchell played with Rudy for however many years in Utah. He knows how to play with bigs like that and how to attack it with Jared. So Jared Allen and Mobley are very comfortable situation for him because he's done it for so long. Anthony Edwards has not done it. And so I think that you're just seeing the growing pains early again. Like I still think it's possible this team puts it together and at least, you know, goes on a run and gets back into playoff talk and all that. But I think that maybe I, for one, underestimated just how much of an adjustment and how stark the difference is in the way that they're playing and maybe how long that takes. I said at the start of the year, give it 20 games, 25 games. Let's see where we're at. And they're going to need every bit of that and probably more to try and find that rhythm that they're looking for. Maybe they won't. Maybe this just will not work. And it's just that it's going to be a failed experiment. But I think that we can give them a little time and see if they can get to the end of the rainbow here.
My last, all right, guys, good stuff.
Sam, how many times have you watched Top Gun in your life?
I think we're at like five, maybe four.
The new one?
Yeah.
I would have taken
a good flick, man.
I rented it the other night and watched it twice in one weekend. So
I bought it. Shout out to my neighbor, Luke. I have a neighbor, good, great dude, who is a proud vet and served our country in a pretty intense manner. And his young son is named Maverick after the movie. So it's hardcore in this street. Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely. No, it was a great movie, man. And it's hard. I mean, now we're doing the
I didn't ask
pop
for a movie
culture movie
you.
Podcast. Hey, where's Zach Harper and Cinephobes when you need them? Yeah, shout out. You know, it's hard to do a Top Gun 2, essentially. They pulled it off. It was good stuff. All right, on the other side of this break, speaking of broken runways and, you know, old-ass planes that can't get off the ground, your Golden State Warriors. We'll see what Slater thinks of their early season struggles. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Slater, you and I were at Golden One Center on Sunday night watching the Warriors fall to the Kings. You and I were at Chase Center on Friday night watching the Warriors fall to the...
They beat the Cavs,
I'm sorry. Yeah. Man, that narrative just got busted up as I tried to throw it your direction. All right, they beat
if
the Cavs.
If they're at Chase Center, Steph Curry is probably, you know,
that's right,
pulling them across the finish line. If they're not at Chase Center, they're
0-7 on the road. Which I think it was Steph last night in the press conference. Somebody mentioned the stat to him, and he was just like, damn, really?
You know, that was Draymond.
Is that Draymond? All right. Yeah. I'm 0-2 here. Regardless, Warriors not playing well. We know the two timeline just reality that they're trying to pull off. And Marcus Thompson, I hadn't read it yet, but I know he wrote today a column about he is not bullish on the two timeline reality and feels like it's going to have to become an either or situation here at some point. Now, before I throw it your way, the other funny part of this context, and I mentioned this to Steph last night, was that with everything the Warriors have been through, you look up and there's so many good teams scuffling, you know, in addition to the Warriors and finding their way. As we do the pod, they're four games out of the top spot in the West. So, you know, the house is not necessarily on fire when it comes to the context of the standings, but they are not playing good basketball. What are you seeing?
Yeah, and that's the thing. They don't – they're. It's not like they're like, oh, no, we better get to the sixth seed as soon as possible. It's more like, uh-oh, is this roster construction, like, extremely flawed? Because last season was the – you know, season one of this, like, two-timeline ambitious experiment, you know, plan from, you know, Joe Lacob from the top down. But if you really remember, you know, look back at last year's roster, obviously, you know, Wiseman's out for the season, so he's off to the side. Kuminga and Moody are rookies. They're barely playing. They only got little, you know, tastes in the playoffs. When they won the title, they won it with a veteran bench that included a 15th roster spot that they decided to use despite the tax bill last season. They used it on Gary Payton II. We all remember how important he was in the playoffs. They're not using a 15th roster spot this season, so let's count them up. That's one just straight-up empty roster spot. Andre Iguodala is on the roster but not playing. We probably won't see him for a while. That's two empty roster spots. They turned what was Juan Toscano-Anderson and Damian Lee, helpful middle-aged veterans that the core liked, into two more picks, rookies right now, Patrick Baldwin Jr. and Ryan Rollins, who are, you know, far from the rotation. They're playing in the G League. So we're now up to five completely empty roster spots really at this point. And then part of that was like, okay, well, they're going to turn over rotation spots to these recent lottery picks. Second overall pick, James Wiseman. Seventh overall pick, Jonathan Kuminga. 14th overall pick, Moses Moody. Well, they were bad early in the season, bad enough to where they've moved off that plan. Wiseman's completely out of the rotation. I believe he's now at three straight DMPs. Moses Moody, who seemed to profile as a perfect, you know, 3-and-D complementary piece, is also out of the rotation. He's had two straight DMPs. Jonathan Kuminga was out of the rotation. He's kind of replaced what Wiseman was doing, but he's still only getting nibbles. He had a couple first half, and then they didn't go back to him in the second half. You know, Steve Kerr's playing Anthony Lamb, a two-way guy that they just added late in camp over Wiseman, Kuminga. These guys that are supposed to carry, you know, this, you know, the keys to the franchise into the future. And it's like, it's kind of an awkward situation. And Steve Kerr continues to come out in press conferences and talk about, like, you know, this is not really an ideal place for a young guy to grow, because they need to come out and make mistakes. But, you know, the Warriors as a team in this situation can't afford the mistakes that these young guys are making. So it's like, you know, can lottery picks really grow here? And there's just like an increasing concern about the flaw of this gargantuan Joe Lacob, I want to contend forever plan, which is like, how do you grow lottery picks when you still need to contend with Steph Curry, who, by the way, looks like a top three player in the league still. So if you know, he doesn't want a season wasted when he rightfully believes, hey, I just was the best player in the playoffs, won the NBA Finals MVP, and I currently look better than that right now. Why are there, you know, five 21 and younger guys filling a roster? Like, that to me is like just like kind of like at the core of what's going on.
Can I cut to the chase? And, you know, we are very early when it comes to the trade deadline, but the obvious natural question that is going to be asked around the league is, you know, do they cut bait on the two timeline approach and start dangling some of these young guys out there and just say, you know, let's go get ourselves another vet, a high level vet, and maybe potentially a big time move? Or would you handicap that it would be more around the edges as far as roster stuff?
Well, you have the open 15th, and they should be a buyout heaven, right? You know, and there's usually at least one or two like really appealing buyout guys. And with the Warriors, not only, you know, good market contender, you know, basically a, you know, a franchise with a good reputation, but buyout guys love minutes, right? You know, the Warriors might be able to offer like rotation minutes to that type of guy. So that's kind of one of the band-aids they can use. You could make,
I mean, That's all well and good, but here's the pressure eventually will come for like James Wiseman's camp.
No question. And that's kind of like Moody. that's the bigger picture, like panic but move. And to me, that is more January, February. You know, Kirk continues to say like, hey, just let us get a few wins and then you'll see the young guys again. His belief is like if Clay gets going, if Poole gets going, both of them are kind of struggling right now. Like, and it's a safer environment to throw the young guys out in where you can make a few mistakes and whatever, they're still rolling teams. He believes, you know, you're going to see these young guys again. They're not out of the rotation forever. But, yeah, I mean, like, these guys don't just need 8 minutes here and there. They need what Jalen Green got in Houston, right? You know, who do you think Jonathan Kuminga pins himself up with? Like, the guy he played with the G League Ignite and thought he was a similar, you know, pick heading into that draft. Well, Jalen Green gets 35 minutes and all you can shoot buffet and do whatever you want in Houston. And he's like, you know, has to go and play like a glue role for like 6 minutes. And if it doesn't go well, you're not going back in the second half. So it's a problem. Now, it's not one that they're deciding if they need to blow it up tomorrow. And the other thing is, if you blow it up, you don't need to, trade every single young guy. Maybe it is just one of them. I mean, you mentioned Wiseman. He's the one so far who seems to fit the worst.
Well, and then the pressure eventually, if not already, is going to come from the other side, right? The veterans and Steph and Draymond. This kind of, John, this reminds me a little bit of we talked earlier about with Gobert and how, like, you know, what he brings as a player, not having the expected impact. Draymond, and Slater, if you disagree, tell me, is playing pretty well on the defensive end, doing Draymond things. Steph is at MVP caliber. Your vets, other than Clay, are doing what we are used to seeing them do. The Warriors are 27th in defense. Like, it's just not making a difference. Every second unit is a train wreck. And, the starters, it essentially doesn't matter how well they play. They can't carry this thing on their own. So I think from a pressure standpoint, and I'll have something later in the week looking at the Warriors and talked to Draymond a bit last night about it. Like, and you could tell that he was pretty measured with his words when it comes to the imperfect balance between the old and the young, but you could also sense that, call it frustration or impatience at this point.
Yeah. I mean, and like, I will say that looking at it from this perspective, one of the reasons that the Timberwolves and other teams that are off to slow starts are not panicking, as you said at the start, Sam, is that look at the Warriors. They're having a hard time with this, right? Like, this is like the snooky blanky of just like comfort that they're trying to find themselves with is like, well, shoot, the defending champs are really going through it. So we should be given a little bit of grace to find our own way a little bit. But I mean, you look at it and the starters have been good, right? It's just that bench that is really falling apart. And Jordan Poole is supposed to be the guy that I think galvanizes, and he has not had that effect yet. And Clay is not Clay yet. And so when you have that combination and then you're not getting anything from the young guys, that puts a lot of pressure, I think, on Steph, on Draymond, on some of the older guys to probably exert more energy than you want them to have to exert early in the season. I imagine that if you're the Warriors, you're thinking, let's just kind of go about our business, ease into the season, and save our bullets for March, April, May. And if you're having to fire them right now, that's probably not good for the long-term prospects of just your legs and the health of it.
Where the veterans, I'd say, are also a little bit at fault here is they haven't closed games like they normally do. I mean, we're talking about literally the greatest, potentially you could say, I mean, this is kind of objective, but the greatest road team core ever. They literally have set an NBA record of winning a road game in 27 consecutive playoff series. They 5 months ago went into Boston and won game six. Like, this is what they do, like close road games. They gave up a 4-point lead in Charlotte against the Hornets without LaMelo or, their starting backcourt, lost in overtime. You know, they had a whole overtime period. They just got outplayed by the Hornets, lost by 7 in overtime. There's something like crazy, like 1-11 in their last like 12 regular season overtimes. Same thing. They led in Miami late, gave it up and lost. And these are when the veterans are on the floor. They, it's crunch time. Same thing in Orlando. You know, the vets just lost to a young Orlando Magic team. And then again, you know, they had the lead against Sacramento. And you know, Sam, you were watching it down the stretch, right? It's Sabonis getting power rebound putbacks. It's Fox hitting jumpers.
2020 Sabonis.
Yeah, 25 and 22 or something like that.
De'Aaron Fox, I saw on stat news.
Missing shots in crunch time on the other end. And yeah, we're not. I'm not suddenly doubting, oh, they can't win playoff games in crunch time anymore. But you get 3 to 4 of those wins, suddenly right now, you know, you're 8-5 instead of 5-8. And there is a more settled
Although it's funny, I talked to a Warriors person last night who flipped it the other way, Slater, and was talking about the games that, you know, they beat the Heat. I'm sorry, they beat the Kings at Chase despite Klay Thompson fouling Kevin Huerter late, you know, should have at least put it to overtime. I'm forgetting the second game. They had, you know, they've had a couple benefits of the whistle at this point where, you know, they might have had a couple more.
That Kings game where you're right. You know, Steph kind of dragged them across the finish
line. It wasn't a Miami thing?
The Cleveland game would have been the second one, but I mean,
okay.
You know, they've closed a couple at home. They killed the Kings the first game. They played them at home. They beat Miami pretty easily, 123-110. They controlled that whole game. And then they crushed the Lakers on opening night. Those are their wins. Yeah. It's not, okay. Steph has had to have a few superhuman efforts. But I just mean, there have just been straight up, 4-minute segments where it's like, hey, veterans, go out play the Hornets right now. Go out play whoever. And I'm again, this happens, but just at the time it's happening has created a scenario where, again, they're going in to play the Spurs at home tonight. And it's like, this would be a perfect game to give Moody, give Kuminga, give Wiseman a bunch of minutes. But they're 5-8, and they're like, no, we desperately need to beat the Spurs. And that's right. Where I think a little blame is on the veterans, where it's just like, y'all could still be 8-5 right now, 9-4. If you just close out those games, and then everything would just feel less tense right now.
Well, right. And then, yeah, the other thing too, and this is not foreign to them, but when you are at the level that they are at and you have been there for as long as they have, the target on your back is so big. And so that every game that you play, it's these other young guys, it's De'Aaron Fox, it's their Super Bowl. And so when they feel like they have you on the ropes and these young guys have a quicker step and they can go at you, or Sabonis can use his muscle and outwork you on the board, they're going to do it. The Warriors are never going to get someone's B or C effort. They're all coming for their necks. And if they're going to show a little weakness, that's a problem.
Oh yeah. You guys should have been in Orlando when they closed out the Warriors. It's
it's the best thing ever.
The Paolo Banchero era has arrived. It was the happiest post game you'll ever see in an Orlando Magic arena. And same thing in Charlotte. It is funny to see.
So we're going to later on have a brief MVP discussion, but on the Steph front, just to throw a few numbers out there and let people know how incredible he's been, even in the face of them struggling. You got 32.8 points a game. What's wild, and again, we'll get to it, 8 guys in the league right now averaging 30 plus. So the scoring is off the charts. He is at 6.5 assists, 6.8 rebounds. From distance, though, my goodness, 43.4 from three right
on
now.
So Steph volume. Is.
Yes, on 11.9 attempts from beyond the arc per game. So
he's
good stuff, gentlemen.
Right. He's led them in scoring in all 13 games he's played.
Well, here's the opposite of that, and I'm glad you kind of reminded me. I'm going to share this thing, my last Warriors thought. Klay Thompson is leaving Golden 1 Center last night, and I was talking to somebody in the hallway, and it was essentially just Klay and I in the hallway. And so as he walks by, literally just said, "You good, man?" And that was it. It was a very generic hello. Shake hands real quick. And, you know, him saying, "Yeah, I'm good. Good to see you," would have sufficed. Klay shakes his head. And as he walks away, goes, and I think I got it close, but I'm somewhat paraphrasing. He said, "Man, I'm good. I'm great. I'm playing basketball in November. I'm good. Sam, the shots are going to fall. The shots are going to fall." And I'm like, I didn't say anything about the shots.
Keep telling yourself that, Clay.
You know what he then did? He then went on Instagram last night, posted a video of him hitting a three against the Kings and said, "My belief is stronger than your doubt. I promise you it's coming. And when it does, the floodgates will open."
Okay. I just, it's, you know, it's like, man, I asked about the weather, basically, and I got everything. All right, let's pivot here. Slater,
you know, we, by the way, that IG post was, I think he might have tagged you in it.
I'm sorry, I said hello. Well, the other funny part of that moment was I actually had a friend at the game last night. Again, I keep going to neighbors. I had a neighbor friend at the game, and he was standing right there, and I almost had Clay say hello to the neighbor just to be nice. And I admitted to the neighbor later, I was like, I mean, they just lost. He's not playing well. I'm not sure what kind of headspace he's going to be in. So I was just being nice and letting Clay roll by. And I got the whole breakdown. Slater, I was going to say, you know, we routinely talk about the Kings in passing on this podcast, just because of the part of the country that, that you and I live in. We're going to do a quick, legitimate Kings segment here and actually talk Kings basketball. You know, they beat the Warriors last night. I believe they have won 6 out of 8. Yep. The hardcore Kings fans would argue that unofficially that they're on an 8-game heater because they got robbed out of the other 2 games, you know, because of official mistakes. But they look good. You know, they started 0-4, which I know they'd like us to forget. But, you know, they found their way. They're 500 now. In the thick of things, De'Aaron Fox, I saw this on the StatMuse Twitter account. He's leading the league and clutch scoring right now. And just, you know, even a night like last night, didn't really score all that well the first 3-plus quarters, but I thought did a sound job trying to slow Steph down after he'd been destroyed by him in the first 2 matchups. And
blocked,
you know, that Mike,
Steph 3 out of bounds.
Yeah, blocked a Steph 3. You know Mike Brown has been in his ear a ton and even sat him down a couple times for bad defensive possessions and trying to convince him that being a complete player is the most important thing. You know, what are you thinking of this Kings buzz?
They have a real chance this week to gain some steam. They have 3 home games, which includes their first TNT home game since 2018. They play the Nets Tuesday night, Spurs, I think, Thursday, Pistons Saturday. Maybe the days are a little mixed, but that's who they're finishing this homestand with. You know, that's a chance to go 9-6. I don't know, after starting 0-4. The Fox-Mike Brown relationship is like at the key to all this right now. It's not like their defensive rating is like, you know, so much better than it used to be. I think they're still bottom 10 in the league, but you do see Fox playing with a, you know, much, you know, more ferocious spirit defensively, running back in transition, trying to get on guys on ball.
26th, man.
Yeah.
They're down there. Yeah.
But it's like, and Mike has talked about this publicly. Like, Fox is allowing Mike Brown to like coach him hard, yell at him, bench him. You know, you mentioned the Cleveland game at home. It was a huge win. To me, that was probably even bigger than their Warriors win. Fox did not box out Kevin Love and then fouled Kevin Love in a kind of sloppy manner in like early fourth quarter. And Mike Brown pulled, you know, it, like middle of that quarter, Mike Brown pulls him. It seemed pretty obvious he wasn't happy with his defensive effort. Had Davion Mitchell, who changed the kind of complexion by kind of hounding Donovan Mitchell, who was going off. And Fox didn't pout. He didn't, you know, he was ready to go back in with about 3 minutes left, and then he closed it out. And he defended well down the stretch. And I just think there are little moments like that, and Fox just, like, really embracing, you know, this situation and this new coaching staff. Also, like, the fact the front office committed to him. They traded Tyrese Halliburton. They got Sabonis to be a pick-and-roll partner for him. They got his college teammate Malik Monk, who's really helping off the bench. They got Kevin Huerter, who I think is a very good backcourt complement. You know, they fit the team around De'Aaron Fox, and part of that is, like, okay, De'Aaron Fox, go be, you know, fringe all-star. And there's a real belief he can maybe make the All-Star team, you know, locally in Sacramento this season. And
I like how you catch that. Nobody outside of Sacramento believes it, apparently, but just locally. I mean, he's 25-5-5. Those are All-Star numbers.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's 12 games. Again, like 6-6 can turn into 7-12 real quick.
Ice bucket challenge with Slater. He's just putting cold water in everything. Yeah.
Hey, maybe because I'm covering these grumpy Warriors lately, but no kidding. No, there's extreme reason for optimism. And, you know, like, how about Monty McNair's teams, like, the offseason moves they made? The Huerter trade, they got him for a lottery-protected first-rounder, so it won't be a high first-rounder. He's shooting, like, what?
51% from three. 51%
from three.
On 7 attempts. It's crazy.
And it's not just that. I mean, he's doing some secondary playmaking.
Looking down at Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, Monk was their mid-level signing. He's been great off the bench. And Keegan Murray, what do you have, 21 last night? I mean, they look like they hit on that pick. So they've built this team, you know, up to be what they want it to be, which is like a play-in team, you know. And we can go back to like, should this have been the plan? But at least the plan that they put in place seems to be working.
Yeah, no, they look good. The Herter contributions, I think, have been somewhat under the radar, despite Slater's attempts with a good piece on Herter when he was in Florida. You guys sat down. Davion Mitchell is the one that, if you look to nitpick a bit, like, you know, makes an impact defensively, but offensively comes and goes. You know, it seems at times that Mike has a hard time figuring out how to kind of employ him. You know, Rashawn Holmes falling out of the rotation is just kind of is what it is, but you know, you owe him a fair amount of money. And Mike obviously is trying to go defense first with some of these rotations, but they're spunky. They have, you know, at least so far, the kind of vibe. I mean, honestly, to fight through that, I mean, I've seen it for so long in this town that you go down 0-4 and these players are in this town and they hear the noise so often about the playoff drought going back to 2006 that, you know, like, I think for a lot of players, you know, 0-4 could have felt like 0-12. And then, you know, you lose some of that belief. And then next thing you know, the season's unofficially over a third of the way in. So credit to them for turning it around. And, you know, I mean, shoot, if the Warriors are still four games out of the top spot in the West and feeling like they're not sunk yet, you know, the Kings are in a much better position. So they look good. I don't know how it all comes out in the wash, but, you know, they seem to have an identity, and I like the way they're playing.
Well, and I'll say this, Sam, quickly on Sacramento, as covering another team that had a very, very long playoff drought.
Right.
I would not discount the value of getting to the play-in and being in a competitive environment and, you know, trying to just show your fans and your team that there is some level of progress. We can all say that, yeah, it would be better. Well, if they just tank and try and get Wembanyama and all that. And yeah, long-term that would be great. But like the shot in the arm that some level of success does for a franchise that has never had it is really, it's necessary. I mean, it's unbelievable how long it's been since they've been in the playoffs. So to be in the mix, if they can be, even if it's not a five seed, I think they just need that right now for the sanity of everyone involved around there.
Yeah, they just need more nights like Sunday, right? I mean, it was like a party in there post game, Sam, mm-hmm. right? You know, like Vivek's going crazy at half court.
Vivek and his love of the Warriors, like they beat the Warriors. He was going crazy.
They shot the beam up, like you said, and it's like they just.
The beam is legit. Whoever came up with the beam idea, give that person a raise. So if anybody hasn't seen it, but in Golden One Center is it, I think, a pretty beautiful building on its own. Yeah. And then they shoot this purple beam just up into the heavens. And, you know, I was walking out of there last night with some of our colleagues going, that's pretty cool, man. And of course, you know, folks are going to chime in with the smart ass response, like, hey, we ain't going to see that beam very often, you know, but lately that beam's been going up. It's kind of a cool little thing.
That's safe for planes and everything. Do we know?
I know, right?
wouldn't that be the worst?
I don't know. All right, but guys, before we get out of here, we're not going to check every box we were trying to check today. Other than to say shout out briefly to the Oklahoma City Thunder, man. I write a note the other day about how a lot of executives around the league are eyeing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as a guy that they would love for him to be at his wit's end with all the losing with OKC and want to get out of town because he's just an incredible player. He's in the first year of his 5-year extension, you know, admittedly, you know, got some significant pushback from the OKC side to, you know, the way that story was framed, and they turn around. And so the assertion, of course, being that OKC is not as bad as we are painting them out to be. And they go out and they beat Toronto and they take it to the Knicks in the Garden. Shai goes crazy, had 37 at 21 in the third quarter and was dominating. They play Boston today, so they might come down to earth a little bit, but OKC playing well. But to pivot to our final topic on the MVP front, guys, mainly, you know, we already highlighted Steph, mainly for me, an excuse to just make sure that we talk about Joel Embiid on this week's tampering because 59 points against Utah. They win 105-98. Of course, no James Harden with his injury. He's out. So Joel is having to carry the load again. 19 of 28 from the field, 11 boards, 8 assists, 7 blocks, a stat line that you have never seen in the history of the NBA. Now, the asterisk there, of course, is that in the Wilt Chamberlain era, the league wasn't tracking blocks until, I think, 73. So,
Ash Burr will be in your mentions quickly on that. So,
hey, we don't need more of that.
That's an insane stat line, though. When that was like, I didn't watch the game. When somebody was like reading that stat line off, I was like, okay, you're making that up.
Right. You know? Right.
I'm like, what?
This is the NBA 2K screenshot. Yeah. I mean, 20 of 24 from the line. 20 of 24.
Well, yeah. I mean, when the big fella gets going, there's nothing you can do with it because either you're going to foul him or he's going to make his jumper. And like, that was insane and so needed. Like, that's another team that hasn't played well out of the blocks and not had very good spirit either. Not very good. They look kind of lazy. They look kind of slow. And that's just Embiid saying, all right, enough is enough. And I mean, that was incredible.
Yeah. They're now, I mean, they're 7-7. And like you said, yeah. John, they've been scuffling. Is it sustainable? Probably not. I worry about in general. I mean, his health stuff is always front and center. And so hopefully he can stay healthy. But, you know, I mean, shoot, it was a back-to-back, guys. They play Atlanta and beat them on Saturday, 121-109. He goes for 42-10 in that game. So, you know, Joel playing out of his mind. But here is a quick breakdown, at least from the offensive output standpoint of his kind of MVP counterparts. Luka leading the league in scoring at 34.3, 8.7 boards, 8.1 assists. Feel pretty confident saying nobody else is 38-8 in the league right now. We mentioned Steph, who's second in the league in scoring. Jason Tatum just absolutely balling out, and Boston is at 32.3 with 7.2 boards and 4.1 assists. You know, I don't want to just keep going with the numbers, but Giannis, you know, playing out of his mind. Donovan, until the Cavs losing streak, you know, was already being talked about in the MVP discussion.
Markkanen.
There it is. Well played, John. Well played. Lauri Markkanen. I said last week, man's playing so well, I finally had to learn how to spell his last name. I always had, like, you know, too many K's, not enough N's. And Slater, I know you don't love this discussion this early, but so it doesn't have to be MVP, but just of all the names that I mentioned, and if I forgot anybody, feel free to grab somebody else, but who has amazed, I mean, John Morant's got to be mentioned in Memphis. Who has amazed you the most so far?
Oh, I mean, I just like how Giannis is playing. When we talk about winning, what he's doing there, I think just kind of creating that, like, you know, every game, 82-game culture. To me, that just seems
no, we got to keep saying it. No Chris Middleton. You know what I mean? Like that part, you know, some of these markets, guys, not to get on a tangent, but media-wise, it's like the Milwaukees, the Denvers. It's like, you know, listen, just because we don't have the spotlight on them nationally all the time does not absolve us from making the mistake of not contextualizing what these players are doing. Like Giannis, not only dominating, but they are 10-2 with no Chris Middleton.
Yeah. I mean, and it just looks very sustainable. And it's just like part of the reason it looks very sustainable is like you're like every single night that Giannis plays. And by the way, I do think he missed two games maybe, and they lost maybe both. But like he's just, if he's playing in a regular season game and you are not locked in, he's just going to destroy you. And that's, I'm not saying, like, again, he's my MVP early front runner. It's just like, I don't know, you asked me for a player who's awesome, and that he is one.
Yeah. John, what are you thinking?
Yeah, and also, yeah, I mean, I love Giannis and the way that he's played and Tatum as well. I think that two other guys that I've really, really just enjoyed watching and I think are huge, huge parts of what their teams are doing right now, Devin Booker has been great. Donovan Mitchell too in Cleveland. I just think both of those guys, you know, the Cleveland didn't have Garland a little bit early and Donovan just kind of took over there. Phoenix has been playing without Chris Paul. Devin Booker has just been, you know, an unbelievable two-way guy. MVP and stuff, probably not, but like just the way that those two guys have really just put up huge, huge efforts. I love the way both of those guys are playing.
How about Luka's usage in Dallas?
Yeah, it's insane, dude. It's like, what is it, like 80%?
Well, he's averaging 34.3 points per game. He's taken 23.5 shots a game. He also still has 8.1 assists per game. He is just controlling everything in Dallas.
They're 7-5, though, you know, and this
we
should probably, you know, this will be a preview for down the road, maybe next week. We need to have Tim Cato on, our Mavericks beat writer, and break down Dallas, because I'm constantly torn about the Luka experience. Yeah, like in a vacuum, I love watching him play. He's incredible. But I thought we didn't talk enough in the offseason about how significant it was that he lost Jalen Brunson. You know, like he already didn't have enough help, and he's been, you know, this has been his NBA legacy so far, is remarkable regular season play, and then remarkable postseason play.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, he single-handedly
But there's a ceiling on what he can accomplish because of roster construction.
But that's not on him necessarily. I mean,
I'm not saying it's on him.
He's a unique player to fit a roster around, but like that's just the Mavericks not giving him Jalen Brunson. Like,
yeah, I'm not putting it on him. I'm saying roster construction. I mean, you know, now it's Nico Harrison. You know, before it was Don Nelson Jr. You know, I mean, it's still, I think because of his brilliance, we still, you know, celebrate how incredible he is, which I do understand, but seemed, I think, to gloss over at times, you know, the other aspect.
He, because of what he did to Phoenix in last year's playoffs, it was like there didn't need to be a wider scope view of like what's going on in the Luka era, because that did feel like a breakthrough, right? What he did to the one seed in the West.
But then they said goodbye to the dude who was incredible in the playoffs with him.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. This season does feel like if they flame out, like that's at this stage of a young, like really, you know, generational star is when we start talking about like, well, how about you win? You know, like LeBron faced this too, right?
I was just going to say that. Yeah. It's LeBron early Cleveland days, right? Like him carrying Ira Neubel and Booby Gibson and all those guys. It's like, hey, get him some help. Like that's the thing, more than Luka, just get him some freaking help.
It's his Smush Parker experience. Well, that's Christian right. Wood, you know, has had some really good moments, and I think he's been hurt. So, I mean, that's, you know, to the Mavericks defense, that was a big-time pickup that has looked pretty good. So, a pod
he's
for another day.
Man.
Yeah, absolutely. But, John, thank you, my friend, for jumping on. And
thank you.
Dissecting the Wolves with your autopsy. That was well done. Slater, appreciate you, brother. And to the listeners, we will be back next week. Thank you.